Hey, welcome to Heights Church. We are so grateful that you're joining with us. Whether you're here in the Prescott area or you're joining us from around the world, welcome to our online family. We want to encourage you to click subscribe and share this message with your friends and family. And we are praying that through this message, God will help you live the life that you were created for in Jesus. Let's get to it.
Those of you joining us online, welcome to you. Paulden, that is you. You better be having breakfast today. That's all I got to say. Baghdad, welcome to you. I don't know if you eat or not, but you probably should. Probably should include it. More people will come, I guess. I don't know. We have Elke, who is a longtime Heights family member who's in Cleveland. Sorry you're in Cleveland, but you know, welcome to you. We're glad you're with us. Diane in Nevada is along with us. Could we say good morning to our online fam? I love that we get to do, life together, including having our youth family in here. Like you guys, yeah, there you go. We may get nowhere today and you know who to blame. That's all I'm saying. So one of the things I love is if you're here and you're new and you're going, what is this? Here's what I need you to hear. This is a space that in our core values of who we are as a church family, we are for Jesus. What that means is we will create space for Jesus. What that means is that Jesus stands front and center of this church. So no matter who's up here, no matter what titles are held, no matter if it's this location, other locations, if it has to do with Heights, what hopefully you walk away with is it is more about Jesus than it was anybody that was here, right? So what you hopefully walk away with is that Jesus is the center, that everything about what we do, everything about who we are, that if you're looking for and waiting, like if you're visiting or you're dating, as we call it around here, like you're just hanging out long enough to see if you like us, but you're just going like, okay, oh, I want to really figure out what they're about. You just found out. There's nothing hidden behind the curtain. We will create space for Jesus. Why? Because you have a life that you were created for in Jesus. And we will give everything we have to see you live that, to see you center your life on the person of Jesus. And so that right continues on into even the conversations we have, which is why we've been in this conversation on this collection of talks, Jesus as the center of all things now for 6 months. Why? Because it is so vital that your life is centered on the person of Jesus. Right? It's one thing to say, well, the church should be, right? It's another thing to go, no. Your individual life should be centered on the person of Jesus. And when it's not, things will go sideways, guaranteed, because you were designed and created to have Jesus at the center. The entire book points to the person of Jesus. Whether you go to the beginning, the end, all of it points to the person of Jesus. So much so that John, who was a disciple of Jesus, who spent time with Jesus, got to witness and be at things that other disciples didn't because he was in the inner circle with Jesus, a close friend of Jesus. He captures for us, he writes down these different moments from the life of Jesus. And essentially what John goes is, I got 7 things for you that you have to see. Why? Because John calls them signs. What is a sign? It is a powerful act that is done for those that can't see, that they would see who Jesus really is. And so the whole point of where we've been for the last few weeks is that you would see who Jesus really is so that you can center your life on him. Week 1 of looking at John's writings, we talked about that Jesus is in control from the micro to the macro. Everything is under his control. So what happens to me if I center my life on him? I am going to give over control to who? To the person of Jesus. Why? Because he's actually in control and I have a false sense of being in control, right? And we followed that up last week that we were looked at these moments when Jesus healed. And the point from the healings of Jesus was he was trying to get across to us, I am here to heal you holistically, not just physically. I want to heal every part of you. I want to heal your baggage from religion. I want to heal your past, present, and future. I want to heal your sin problem. I want to heal your physical ailment. Like all of it, Jesus is pointing to, I want to heal you holistically. And so Jesus now goes from being, when we say healer, we often think of healing just in the physical sense. Jesus wants to heal your soul. Jesus wants to heal every part of who you are. And so we're stepping forward this week into another one of these moments that John captures that is a powerful design that's designed to help you see. But to get to that, it reminds me of a concert. Anybody in the room, you're like Christian concert people. Any of those people in the room? Okay, a few of you. That's not good for the Christian music industry. I'm just saying. I was about to say I'm going to hurt your feelings, but I guess a bunch of you feel the same way I do. So there you go. But a couple of years ago, my wife and I, she I've told you before, she struggles with her health and has done for 9 years. And one of her weapons is worship. And so you'll often hear my wife, and when she's going through the worst of days, you'll hear her worshiping. And one of her favorite people to help her through stuff is Phil Wickham. You might have heard of Phil, right? Yeah. You sing a bunch of his songs here, you would recognize him, Battle Belongs, all that kind of stuff, right? Like, so for her, she's like game time when she's singing Phil Wickham. She's fighting what's there. And so Phil was coming to Phoenix a couple of years ago. Some of you may have gone, but Phil, there's this concert. My wife's like so excited to go. We get tickets, and I'm excited because we're leaving the kids at home. Anytime you leave the kids at home and just go with the love of your life, it's a good day. And so Cindy and I are going. We go to dinner. Things are great. We pull up to the concert early because we don't have kids. You're on time. It's beautiful, right? And so we're walking up to the entrance holding hands. This is a magical moment. We get inside. Our seats were a little higher than I would have preferred. I was analyzing the venue on the way in. And so now we're kind of here and the stage is here, right? So we're not directly sideways, but we're kind of looking onto it. And the concert starts and my wife begins to worship and she is like in her element. And I'm in my element. And what that looks like is, who is mixing? This sounds terrible. Like, did they bring this sound system in? Or like, is this the one that's here? Man, who designed this building? This is not a well acoustically designed building. Like, why would they do this? Oh, it gets better. Oh, those sub speakers right there? Like, they've got humans 2 feet away from them. That's a horrible experience. Why would you put the sub speakers at? Who's in charge of this thing? Huh? Who put this concert on? So now I'm on my phone looking up who put this thing on. Meanwhile, my wife is worshiping. She's singing her heart out. She's pouring it out. Man, the lights are terrible. This doesn't feel immersive like a concert should feel immersive. Why did they not think of the people in the nosebleed, right? You know, if they had more haze, it would help the beam show and it would feel more immersive. I mean, meanwhile, I don't know how many people are there. They're all worshiping. And I'm in work mode talking to my wife like a production person. And then I start to analyze this one song came on that I didn't know, but she's been singing for weeks and it is her favorite. And I'm like, what is this song? This is terrible. Funny thing is, we sing it here now. Go figure, right? And I look over at one point, and my wife is in tears. And she's so frustrated at me. She's like, you have ruined this entire thing. I was like, baby, I didn't mean to do that. Like, I'm good. I can worship. And she's like, no, it's done for me. She's like, you've taken me out of the moment. And so then I'm like trying to, you know, like, we can do this, babe. Let's go. And she's like, no, we're leaving. And so we go downstairs and stand at the back. Now, the Lord gave me wisdom because I kept my mouth shut. It sounded worse downstairs than upstairs, you know. And I'm like, babe, we can stay here. Like, this is good. And she's like, no, I just, my heart's not here anymore. You ever had a moment when you completely missed the point? I mean, here I am in what was a holy moment for my wife, a healing moment. And my cynicism and criticalness, analytic logic, right? Just destroyed it. I got asked last night, how was the card ride home? You can imagine. You can imagine. I'll let you fill in the gaps. Anybody else miss the point? Anybody ever have that moment where you're like, man, I completely missed it? If you have, you will relate really well to a group of people we're about to talk about. In John chapter 6, again, John capturing a moment for us, a sign. Sometime later after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him. So a great crowd is following him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Okay, so a great crowd is following Jesus, right? We're privy to it. And what John captures for us is he goes, hey, that word sign I've been using, remember, a sign is a powerful act that is done that those that can't see, you would see Jesus for who he is. So they've seen the signs that have pointed to who Jesus really is. But what you get in this moment is you don't get them saying, we saw the signs of you turning water into wine, and so we are here because you are the God who's in control of everything. That's not what it says. It doesn't say that, hey, wait, we saw the signs of you healing the man of 38 years that was blind that we talked about last week. We saw the signs of you healing from a distance, and we know that you are the one that brings holistic healing, and we need healing, so we are following you because you're the only one that's got it. That's not what it says. It says they saw the physical healing and they're there for more. They are missing the point of Jesus. They are missing the point of Jesus for the sign. I wonder how many of us, right? We're now in week 3 or in the 6-month journey, a lot longer, of intentionally looking at moments that point us to the person of Jesus. But here's the thing. The signs that we've looked at so far, that if you've been here and you've heard, the point of teaching these signs is not that you get to come in and go, hey, I got to worship today and I got to listen to a message today and I'm doing dinner after or lunch after. I'm a little early, lunch after, right? And you get to lunch and you forgot what was here. That's not the point of this. The point of this is that you would hear, that you would see that whatever blindness covers your eyes, that you would see Jesus for who he is. And the response would be, wait a minute. If Jesus is God and God is in control of everything, then I can let go of control. That's how this should work. But if you're anything like me, letting go of control doesn't happen sitting here right now. Part of it can start, but it builds into my weeks and builds into the next moments where as I get with family and I get with friends and I get in conversation and I spend time with God, what happens is I begin to go, God, I need to give you control. It's a journey that begins and carries on. But sometimes we're missing the point for the sign. Oh, we saw the sign. Jesus turned water into wine. It was great. Over 800 bottles, right? Oh, we saw the sign. Holistic healing. Healed 3 different people, 3 different ways. Wow. Look at that. All right, what do you want for lunch? Right? But it's not meant to be that. It's meant to be a change that happens deep within you because you saw Jesus for who he is. And so this crowd comes. Verse 3. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. So what does Jesus do? The crowd is coming. Jesus knows this. Where does he lead them? He leads them to a mountainside. Now, in the Bible, things are extremely important. Context matters. And so the context we're given a location of this mountainside, which actually was the Bethesda Valley, which if you're familiar with the map, Sea of Galilee, it's to the northeast. Why is that significant? Because everywhere, this is why the story of God is so important to understand the whole narrative, right? So everywhere that this valley is specifically mentioned in scripture, it always talks about how lush the cows are. It always talks about how strong the bulls are. It talks about wild cattle that is grown there, that they are the richest, they are the fattest. It speaks of provision. So what you have on this hillside that Jesus leads them to is a reminder, right? Because what happened? How did they get that land? Well, God set them free from slavery. God moves them forward. God brings them into this land. God divides the land up and he tells the half tribe of Manasseh, hey, you're going to take this whole area here, where this valley is. What did the half tribe of Manasseh do? They raised wild cattle. What were those cattle like? They were rich and flush, right? They were lavish. So this area is an area that God has given as provision. Jesus leads a group of people up to an area that should be a reminder of their heritage of provision. They miss the point of Jesus by their heritage. Here's what I mean. They, as the story unfolds, you'll see they don't catch the location and what they're in and what God's done and his faithfulness and this heritage that they have. They discount the heritage. I wonder how many of us miss the point because of our heritage. Now, I'm not like you, or some of you. I don't know, maybe all of you. I was born in England, right? But you were born in America. What is America known for around the world? That it is a nation established on Christian values, right? You can walk around in countries that don't hold Christian values with an American flag, and they will assume that you are a Christian. Right? There's such a rich heritage to where you were born. Think about it for a second. They do these polls, right? Where they go and ask people like, hey, what's your religion? And people who are taking them go, well, I was born in America and my grandma went to a Baptist church, so I guess I'm a Christian. Right? And so there's a whole bunch of people by heritage claiming that they are Christians by the fact that my grandma used to drag me to church every week, right? Or it may be that I was born into a Christian family. They held Christian values. My mom and dad are extremely religious. And so you naturally connect and assume when you're asked, no, I'm a Christian. We used to go to church. My family's all believers. And so we assume that our heritage, but here's the thing, you know today, right? You can miss the point of Jesus because of your heritage. Here's what I mean, that you growing up in a Christian family is not enough. You being associated to somebody within your lineage that was a believer is not enough. We walk through the door sometime and we assume, hey, I'm good. I'm like you. I would claim that I'm a Christian. No, the way that you become a Christian, right? Or let's change the language. The way that you become a follower of Jesus begins with a choice that only you can make, not your grandma. There's only you that can make the choice. You have to make the choice for yourself to see this Jesus. This is why John is even writing going, you've got to see who this Jesus is. And sometimes we miss it by our heritage because I think I'm good. So let me ask you, have you made a choice for yourself that this Jesus who is control from the micro to the macro, this Jesus who wants to heal you holistically, this Jesus, as we'll discover as we walk through this, who is enough, have you made a choice to go, that's the Jesus I'm trusting in? The Jesus who is God, and it's my choice, not my grandma's. But sometimes we miss the point by our heritage. Verse 5, when Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread for these people to eat? He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, it would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. He said, here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? And so we're introduced to now this crowd's coming. And it's fascinating that this miracle, this sign that John's recording, there are other authors, right, that captured the life of Jesus. There's 4 of them. Those 4 eyewitnesses all capture the same story. It's the only miracle that's in all 4. And what they capture in some of the other ones is a conversation that was happening. I believe that this conversation follows one that's captured in the other one. And it went something like this. All the people came up and the disciples went, we need to send them away. They were overwhelmed by the crowd. They're like, they need to go eat or else they're going to start collapsing around here. It's going to be our fault. We're going to be sued. So we got to get them out of here, right? I believe that that's the conversation that then this one picks up on. And Jesus looks at Philip. Out of everybody that's there, he looks at Philip and he goes, "Hey, Philip, where are we going to get bread?" My brain went, why Philip? Why him out of all the disciples? He wasn't known to be the leader. Peter was the leader. Why would you pick poor old Philip? What's interesting with Philip is captured in the narrative as someone who is very logical. So Jesus says at what point, he goes, "Hey, I'm going to ascend to heaven. And when I ascend to heaven, I'm going to go to the Father," which then the disciples panic like, "Wait a minute, we don't know the way." Well, Philip's logic is, if you would just show us the Father, Jesus, we'll be okay. Right? He logics it out. We understand from Philip that he was a problem solver. And so when Jesus asks him, there's two things. There's the logic piece, and then he was from Bethsaida, which is the closest village. So if anybody could solve this problem, it would be who? Philip. He knows where the bakers are. He knows who makes the best bread. He knows how to get these people food. To which Philip then goes, "Well, you know what? There is Joe. He's got a bakery and he charges this much. So that would be that much. And well, my mama could make some bread and we'll pay her for her, you know, raw materials. And then there's Scott down the road and he's kind of a baker, but I'm sure we could get some from," and he does all this logic, right? And he goes, "Hey, oh man, it's going to cost like half a year's wages, 200 denarii. And that would just get everybody one bite." Essentially what he's saying is, it's impossible. You can't do it. It's not going to work. To which point, I love it. Andrew comes in out of nowhere, right? Like he just comes in hot. And he's like, "Hey, I got Lunchable." It's like, "We could divide up some turkey. You get a slice. You get a slice. There's provolone in here. You get a slice," right? And whoa, there's cookies at the end. Who gets the cookies? Right? Like that's essentially what he does. He comes in and goes, "Hey, I got these barley cakes. We call them loaves. They were more like small cakes. They were the poorest of poor food." Think about where they're sitting. They're sitting in a space where it says there's plenty of grass. It's speaking to the provision of God, the lavishness of God, the faithfulness of God. And what is the materials? It's the poorest of the poor food. And that poor food is brought forward by Andrew. There were two fish. We think of fish and we think like a nice salmon that was caught, right? That we're going to throw on the grill later. These fish were small, they were pickled, and they were designed to be a side to your dish. So they weren't even the main course. Nothing was the main course here. You ever miss the point of Jesus because of the problem? And what I mean by that, you ever be where Philip is, where logic takes over? Right? And so logic creates a problem. And because of the problem that logic created, I can't get past that. So therefore, I miss the point of Jesus because I can't get around the problem that's in front of me. I wonder in our analytical nature and current temperature culturally, where we have all the information at our fingertips, isn't it fascinating that you can have all the information you want, all the resources? We have more resources to explain this book than we have ever had on this planet. It is amazing the day and age we live in. Isn't it amazing that I can still miss the point of who Jesus really is? Why? Because I have this problem over here I can't get around. It's the same thing. So what does Jesus do? Verse 10, Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place and they sat down, about 5,000 men. So 5,000 men doesn't include women and children. So often people say it was 10,000. Read commentaries this week that say it was actually probably more like upward of 20,000. So you pick your number, 10,000 to 20. That's a lot of people, a lot of people. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed those to who were seated. Here's what's interesting with that give thanks. You ever notice that you get hungry? Like a lot of you got plans for lunch today. You know what lunch is, right? Lunch is an opportunity to practice your gratitude muscle. Here's what I mean. He gives thanks here. I don't know the context you grew up in, but for me, often when it came to meal times and you were going to pray, like you were praying over the meal, you know that language? We're going to bless the food. We'd pray to bless the hands that prepared it. What Jesus is doing here is blessing God. What Jesus is doing here is being full awareness of his Father. You thought you were just sitting down to lunch. Every time you sit down, it's an opportunity for you to practice gratitude to what? To bless God. It's beautiful. Some of us get to eat three times a day. Some of us eat more than that. Every single time, it's an opportunity to remember gratitude. And so Jesus gives thanks in verse 11, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they what? As much as what? No. As much as what? Now, here's what's fascinating. Humans solving this problem wanted one bite. If we could just get them one bite. But what Jesus says here is as much as they want. That's stunning in speaking who Jesus is. We think Jesus is going to do the bare minimum. We just want him to do the bare minimum. What is Jesus doing? I am the God who is enough. And as the God who is enough, how much do you want? And so often we come to him and we're like, I'm good. Because I know if you give me any more, it's going to affect the rest of my life. So I just want this little piece, not all of it. And he goes, no, I'm here to give you as much as you want. He did the same with the fish. Verse 12. When they had all had how much? Enough to eat. He said to the disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. Okay, I don't know what your visual of this story is, right? But this is the visual I used to have. Jesus gives thanks. He blesses God. He breaks the bread. And then all of a sudden, there's these 12 baskets that they've collected, and he just keeps filling it till they're full to the brim. Then the disciples, who were young guys, they pick up these baskets that weighs a lot, and they're walking around on this grass going, you get bread, right? Like, oh, you want more, right? I heard something recently that transformed this for me. Because recently I heard this. It never says that they came back to Jesus. And I wonder if the basket was actually, because he breaks it and he gives it to them, right? I wonder if the basket only had the one piece in each basket. And I wonder when the disciples went out, and I don't have anything to back this, you guys, so you do with it what you will. But I wonder if the miracle was that when they put their hand in, there was another piece of bread. And when they put their hand in, there was another piece of bread. And then you can imagine, right? They're going, oh boy, whew, there's one. Oh, you want extra? Here you go. You can have some extra. Oh, this is a big piece. God must know you need to eat, right? And they just kept going and going and going and going until what? Everybody had enough. Another version, like the other eyewitnesses said, they were all satisfied, completely full. And then what happens? Okay, boys, go round up the pieces. And it says that the 12 baskets were overflowing. They're filled. Now, numbers are significant in the Bible. 12 connects you to the tribes of Israel. 12 tribes of Israel, right? God is in a space where he has already provided for the nation. And now in this moment, he is providing again. And what is he showing them? That there is enough in Jesus for the entire nation of Israel. That he won't come up short. That he's not going to run out. To which their response, right? Because you're at this point, you're like, oh my gosh, the powerful sign. You get to see Jesus for who he is, that Jesus is enough. Look what happens. After the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who has come into the world. Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountainside by himself. What do they do? They see the miracle and they go, grab him. He'll get rid of Rome. Why? Because they didn't show up empty-handed. They didn't show up to see Jesus for who he was. They showed up with an agenda. That if this turns out the way we think it will, we're going to grab him and he's going to be the warrior that's going to go take care of Rome for us. They missed the point because of their agenda. I wonder how many of you are missing the point of Jesus because of the agenda you walked in with. I wonder how many of you walked in here and you've got an agenda for Jesus. And you're going, if he shows up and does what I want him to do, then we'll be okay. I mean, you might think I'm crazy. I see it all the time. Your marriage isn't working for you. Guess what you do? Let's go to church. And what did you show up with the expectation of? If we go to church, Jesus will show up. And what will Jesus do? He'll heal the marriage. What if the marriage ends in divorce? Is Jesus still enough? Let's get uncomfortable for a minute, because this is where this message really hits home. Is Jesus enough if you came in here and if you are struggling physically with an ailment? I am so sorry. I understand your pain. But if you walk in here and you're coming to church because you're like, I heard that somebody prayed there and Jesus healed them, so I'm going to go to that church. Well, here's the thing. If Jesus doesn't heal, is he still enough? And some of you right now are going, yes, I like that. But you won't know if that's true till the rubber meets the road. When you get the diagnosis you don't want to get, when it doesn't turn out how you want, is Jesus still enough? I mean, can I step on toes for a minute? When your political party doesn't get in November, is Jesus still enough? Because what I see a whole lot of is people giving up on Jesus when things don't work out on their agenda in time. I'm gonna step on a few more toes. We talk about family an awful lot around here, but you know what family has? Family has weird uncles. Family has aunts that are crazy. And so as being part of this family means that maybe somewhere along the way, someone ruffled your feathers and didn't treat you like family. And in the midst of not treating you like family, you missed the point of Jesus. Why? Because what? Your feelings got hurt. And instead of seeing Jesus for who he was and Jesus being enough, now you're piecing out on everything. Why? Because your feelings got stepped on. Because somebody didn't treat you like family. Is Jesus still enough when you get mistreated by those that are supposed to be following him? Because there's way too much church hopping, you guys. It's about putting down roots. It's about standing together as family. It's about anchoring in, not because we're something, but because he is something. And he is worth following. I mean, think about it for a minute. If you're raising grown-up kids and your kids are away from the Lord, it's so painful. But if your kids don't show up for Christmas, is Jesus still enough? If your kid's not talking to you, is Jesus still enough? If you show up because you're looking for a miracle and the miracle doesn't come, you're here for healing and it ends in death, is Jesus still enough? That's the point of this whole story, is Jesus is enough. That whether I'm in sickness or in health, Jesus is enough. whether I don't know how I'm paying rent this month and the bills aren't adding up, or I'm sitting as flush as I've ever been in my life, Jesus is still enough. Whether I have my health and everything how I want it, or I'm on the other side and I don't know how it turns out, Jesus is still enough. Whether I'm struggling with the same old addiction and it just keeps coming back, or I've got so many days sobriety that I never thought would happen, Jesus is still enough. Whether my marriage is broken or my marriage is the best it's ever been, Jesus is still enough. Whether my kids love me or my kids hate me, Jesus is still enough. He's enough. Whether you make the team or don't make the team, Jesus is still enough. Whether your feelings are upset and hurt and you want to quit, or you've got the best community you've ever had, Jesus is still enough. Whether this person is president or that person, Jesus is still enough. We're going to take a moment, because sometimes we move way too quick. And with the team kind of sitting in that moment, the worship team sitting in that moment with you, I want to encourage you to speak to God for yourself. Where are you struggling today for Jesus to be enough? Can you surrender that today? Can you give it up to Him today? Can you get yourself back to laying down your agenda, laying down your problem? And can you just go, Jesus, you're enough. You're enough. You're all I'll ever need. Rich, poor, broken, healed, it doesn't matter, because you're enough. And so we're just going to sit for a minute, and it's your time with God, and then we'll worship together as we move forward.